Welcome to the Spy Point Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Stevens, and I'm joined today by John Casimus, and he is the host of Darn Hungry and a passionate turkey hunter. And two things we're going to be talking about today are spring turkey season and some good cooking. So welcome to the podcast today, John.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Glad
Absolutely.
To be here.
Absolutely. And, you know, before we get started, I just want to remind everybody to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you consume podcasts. And, you know, doing so helps all of our listeners find us and help grow this community. So let's go ahead and jump in and let's talk some turkeys, John.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm ready. I'm totally ready. Gobble, gobble. So
what do you got planned? You know, we're weeks away. I'm heading down to Florida this Friday to kick it off with some Osceolas. Where are you going to kick things off and what do you got planned?
Man, I'm going to kick things off right at my home farm in Southeast Alabama. It's
nice.
Called Sawtooth Plantation. Like the sawtooth oak tree, not the sawtooth mountains out west. And so anyway, I'm actually going to be hunting a neighbor farm. I've got my farm locked down and secured just for something very special that we're going to talk about here in a minute.
All right.
But I'm going to start at my buddy Wayne Crocker's farm. And he's a good friend of mine. He's like a dad, a second dad to me. And we're going to get over there and chase some birds with a couple good buddies of mine. And it's going to be like high school days all over again.
Love it. Love it. So obviously you're going to be hunting some Easterns there.
That's right. Okay. The hardest turkeys in the world to kill. Don't even think about it. And I think that probably Alabama and probably Mississippi are probably the hardest ones to kill. And I mean, even Georgia, throw it in there a little bit, even though them dogs, you know what they're like over there. But no, seriously, these Easterns are really tough turkeys.
Yeah.
And they're going to make another, the thing that I said earlier, we're going to talk about the Eastern is what's going to throw a big wrench in our plans.
But well, they've done it for me in the past too. And listen, as a Florida boy, I might argue that an Osceola might be a little harder than an Eastern, but I'll know better than that because I've hunted some Easterns in Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee, and it's a tough bird to hunt. And we've done it with the bow for years and years and years and finally picked up the shotgun. And, you know, I've been humbled many times by an Eastern.
Yeah, you know, turkey hunting to me is the only type of hunting that I actually use a gun for. And I killed one of my first turkeys I ever killed was with a bow.
Yeah.
And it was super exciting because I'd just gotten into bow hunting and was really just, you know, what that's like when you're drunk on bow hunting and you can't do anything else or want to shoot your bow. But it just kind of got to where I just didn't like having to be in a blind. And then I tried it like kind of behind a tree and things like that. And I just kind of got bored with it. Just it's not as exciting. I really like the turkeys for me.
Yeah.
I, you know, the difference in turkey hunting and deer hunting is, you know, when you're after a really big buck, they're just super smart. Now, old turkey gets really smart, but there's nearly not much of a difference between an old turkey with a 10-inch beard and a young turkey with a 10-inch beard, except maybe the size of the spurs, and they're not really that viewable and all that. So for me, I really love to just see turkeys. I like to see them doing their thing. I like them strutting, and I like them up and close and personal with me. And I typically – last year during COVID, I was locked and sequestered at my farm for 7 weeks, and we hunted every morning. I had COVID today is when I got that. Well, I knew I had COVID today a year ago.
Wow.
Which is March 15th. I think today's the 15th.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I was sick, but I was able to hunt. I really wasn't that sick with it, but it lasted about 3 weeks for me. And I got up and hunted every day. And I think we passed lots of birds that were just kind of walking by us at 35 yards and things like that. And it just, to me, it's just not about killing a turkey.
Nope.
I think it's just about the experience of having around. I'm a big photographer, so I like to take pictures of them and video them up close and personal. And if I can't get one in my little bubble where I feel like I almost can reach out and touch them, then I typically don't shoot them.
Yep.
But I still love to blow their heads off.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, last year, you know, my host of the show that does this Game Changers with me, Billy, we've hunted turkeys with bows for 15 years and we picked up the shotgun last year. And I'm telling you, I sat in there and said, what have I been missing? Cause that was so much fun to shoot them in the face and, and have them, you know, we have them up and close, you know, with a bow, but still it isn't the same. You're right. So, that's awesome.
I make it a little bit more challenging. I shoot a Benelli M2 20 gauge.
Okay.
And it's a great gun because I can run with it through the woods. It's just so light. I can just grab it right where the slide is and grab it and run with it. Doesn't weigh anything. And so I typically shoot them with a, a 20, and that thing will actually kill them at 45 yards. But again, I just, you know, I like them up close.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're kicking it off right there on your home turf. Then talk
and then I'm going straight. I'm coming down to where you're from originally in Florida.
Okay. Where are you going to be in Florida?
I'm going to be hunting near, I think a little east, a little east of Tampa. In that area, I'm going to be hunting with some, I'm actually going hunting with the NWTF. Which is great. I was a guest, and I invite everybody to hunt. People hunt at my farm all year round, and like it's always lovely when you're always the entertainer when you get asked to be entertained. And so, again, I'm just going with my camera. I'm going to self video my hunt. I wasn't able to bring a camera guy with me, so I'm going to. And I love self video, and so I'm going to go video. And if we can have a good day, it'd be great. But it's going to be with some great people. So the fellowship to me always. Supersedes the actual hunt itself, right?
No, absolutely. And I know that country really well. And we're a little bit, you know, more east in the central part of the state in that Osceola County area, but we've hunted them from, you know, Osceola County all the way down to Okeechobee. And that's some beautiful country. I have family outside and in Tampa. So I know exactly where you're talking about. So going to hit the Eastern at home. You're going to hit that Osceola. And then what's next?
So I'll probably end up going up. My good buddy Luke Bryan, who's a country singer, he and I will probably be hunting at his farm. I always go up and hunt with him and listen to both of us butcher the mouth call.
Okay.
I mean, he sings really well, but man, let me tell you one thing. I think I'm probably worse, but it's terrible to listen to us on a mouth call. What I quickly realized after deer hunting so much and spending so much time in the woods, you know, I spend months and months a year in the woods, is that I hear a lot of turkeys, especially at my place. There's some really terrible sounding turkeys out there. And so it makes me feel pretty good when I hear one kind of like, you know, the reed isn't working really well. They're not really, maybe they had too late of a night last night. Something was chasing up a tree and they're not calling too well. And so anyway, we'll go up and probably hunt in south of Nashville.
Okay.
And hunt there, which is always a great hunt. There's just so many turkeys in that area. It truly is a gift of, you know, for a turkey hunter and Eastern turkeys, it's really amazing. And they're smart, but there just happens to be a lot with numbers, and that helps you out a lot.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm going to get a Texas hunt this year. I usually love to go to Texas, but there's a chance I may get a hunt right outside of Dallas. We're opening a new store. I've got a chain of discount retail stores called Crazy Cavs Boys, and we're opening one in Arlington, and I'm going to be out there for a week or two. So I think I may slip a little video button. And then my biggest thing that we've got going this year is that I'm someone who really likes to do things that are very difficult. Yep. And I don't know. It's just been something in my lifetime, from growing up playing sports, playing football at Alabama, to, you know, always, whether I was running an ultra marathon or doing a 100-mile bike race, whatever it is, I like to challenge myself. And I have a young friend, Slade Johnson, who has a company called Trips for Trade, which is a really cool company where you actually, if you have a place to hunt Osceolas in Florida, but yet maybe you want to go up and go to a football game and go see a Titans game. And I have tickets to go to Titans games. I'm willing to put up tickets to trade for a hunt in Florida. Yep. It's where people trade back and forth to really do lots of trips, and especially hunting. And so he had this great idea that we should try to break, or I should try to break, the world record for the fastest Grand Slam turkey hunt in the history. And
all right, come on now.
Yeah, all so right. I know. And so when I tell you how fast we're going to try to do this, I know people are going to think that is insane, and it is. And are we going to be successful? Probably not. But I tell you what, we're going to give it our best effort, and it's going to be all for a great cause. And so anyway, I forgot the guy's name because I'm not somebody that follows a lot of people in the hunting industry, and especially turkey hunting. I love turkey hunting, but I don't know a lot of the people. I know Eddie Salter, of course, and some of the old old school guys. But there's a gentleman out there, and I forgot his name. Forgive me for being rude, but he has killed more Grand Slams than anybody in the world. I think he's killed over 120 or 130 Grand Slams, and he did it in 46 hours. And so we are going to try to do it under 36 hours.
Okay.
And that's basically 2 days of hunting. We're going to start in the morning in Florida, and then we're going to probably stop in Alabama on our way to South Dakota and Kansas. And we're hunting in areas that, based on the NWTF map, that are true maps
exactly
for that species. There's no really chance for a hybrid type of a turkey. And even though a lot of there are Merriams in certain parts of northern Nebraska where I typically hunt, but we're having to go a little bit further away, different places up into South Dakota to make sure it's, for the map purposes, a real Merriam. So the plan is going to be to start in Florida. And if we've got birds on camera, thank the Lord for Spy Point and these cameras that send pictures. Because I've got a ton of them out on the farms that I've got kind of secured and locked down for us. Hopefully we're going to have birds that are going to be patterable, but it's, again, late in the season. The real challenge to this hunt is going to be that we're having to do this around April the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, the 20th. So it's very, very late in the season for Florida and getting very late for Alabama as well. But then kind of early up there in the Midwest, where we're going to be up there hunting those Merriams and Rios. So it makes it quite challenging. And there's no, what the birds are doing now is totally irrelevant to what they're going to be doing 4 weeks from now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. And so that's going to make it a little bit challenging. And so anyway, we're going to head out, and based on where we've got birds, we may go Florida straight to South Dakota and Kansas and try to kill three in one day.
There you go.
I know that may sound crazy, but
listen, I love it.
Hey, how are we getting there? So one thing that I did in 2003, when I was growing my first company, I'm the founder of a company called Zoe's Kitchen, which is a national fast casual restaurant brand.
And
when I was, thank you. That's my mom's name is Zoe. So that's
very
where
cool.
I came from. So when I was starting that company, I knew there was no way for me to really grow that business fast enough without me being able to get into an airplane and fly myself around. And so I started in 03 and got my license after my first back operation. I couldn't exercise for a month. So the next morning I went and started taking flight lessons. And 4 weeks later, I had my pilot's license. I bought an old little high wing 182 Cessna.
Love it.
And was flying that. Then I ended up, you know, progressing, getting into different airplanes. And that's kind of how I ended up building my business. And so the flexibility and the freedom and the time it saves to be able to travel like that. So I will be piloting the airplane. I'll have five other guys with me. And that's going to give us the freedom to go where we think we have the birds when we do. And so we either go Florida, South Dakota, Kansas, all in one day, hopefully. And then if we could get that done in one day, we would come back, spend the night at my farm. I probably wouldn't get much sleep. We'd get back and then go hunting the next morning, because I feel like it's going to be a lot easier to kill an Eastern right off the roost, first thing in the morning, if you know where they are and have them, you know, and have them pegged to a tree. And if not, we'll kill the Osceola right off the bat, because I think that the farm we're hunting is a small 40-acre farm.
Haven't had a lot of pressure, John, you should be fine. You know?
No pressure. It never gets hunted. It's right next to a big wildlife area, a huge, you know, thousands of acres. So this man feeds these turkeys just for fun. And anyway, we hope that, you know, with hunting pressure, because the public land gets a lot of pressure and you just don't know what's going to happen. And so anyway, we're going to go and try to see if we can work it all out. And if not, we're still going to stay after it. We're going to kill the Grand Slam, but it just may take us longer than the time allotment. But, and we're all going to do it for a really great cause, Brian. That I want to tell you about as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the NWTF, which for all of us that like to turkey hunt, and whether you're a big game hunter, like what the Safari Club does for big game hunters, I think there's a real misconception out there in the world that, and I think it's, the story is finally starting to be told. And this is really serious for any of you guys listening to this, is that if you truly love to hunt, and I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you're an avid hunter and very passionate about hunting, that you have to get off your butt and you have to do things from a charitable standpoint to ensure the future of hunting for all generations to come. And when I mean charitable, it's not just monetarily you giving money to an organization. It's not anything like that. Sometimes it could be something as simple as you taking a young person who's never been introduced to the outdoors and getting that person introduced to the outdoors and getting them excited and passionate about doing a couple of things. One, getting off that stupid telephone. Number two, not sitting in the house all day. And number three, getting outdoors and experiencing something they'd never have. And hopefully that passion, because the average, somebody told me a statistic that was crazy, that the average license holder of a hunting license in the United States is 62 or 3 years old.
That's crazy.
And that's really, really, really bad for all of us hunters, because without money going into licenses and money going into organizations like the NWTF and having more hunters, people want to hunt, their lands are not being preserved and put in positions for people to use them. Animal species are not being saved and brought back like a lot of the big game hunters have done out in Texas, with bringing back the scimitar horned oryx from near extinction to having thriving in the thousands by raising these animals. And the NWTF, what a great organization for all of us turkey hunters, because you know, turkey season is very short, but you know, I think in the 70s, there was about 1.7 million turkeys in the United States. And now I think in 2020, there's over 4.5 million birds. And they've, you know, they've gotten over 20, they've effectively impacted over 20 million acres of ground for hunting over the lifespan of the NWTF. And so an organization like that, that is solely dependent upon donations from hunters and people who want to donate, it's critical. So the purpose of our hunt, I'm funding this hunt completely by myself. I'm paying for the plane, I'm paying for all the hotels, I'm paying for the licenses, I'm paying for a production crew to document this feat out of Kansas. ICT Group, they're amazing. The creative guys that filmed Darn Hungry, using those guys. And so anyway, we have a huge undertaking and logistical issue to get this done, and I'm funding that. And we also have gotten over $25,000 worth of giveaways that we are going to be giving to everybody that logs in for this hunt, and everybody who donates. The minimum donation is going to be $35. And with that $35 donation, you're going to get a membership to the NWTF, which is great.
Hey, John, tell us what is that website that they can go to check this out and make a donation and learn about the giveaways and everything?
Yeah. So the website is going to be under36.com.
Okay.
And that's going to drive people to that site. And we're going to be launching all this on my social media as well. And my YouTube channel, which is at John Casimus, which is JohnCasimus. And we'll have a lot of information on how you donate. And what's really cool, Brian, is that we are going to have on the website that's being hosted by Trips for Trade, people are going to be able to go in, and if you make a donation, based on the size of your donation, you get certain number of chances in the raffle, which we're giving thousands and thousands of gifts away. I mean, the gifts are amazing. What we're going to give away, a lot of gifts.
And that's awesome.
That's going to be great for everybody. And then we're going to give everybody a chance to guess what is going to be the time we're going to finish this Grand Slam.
Okay.
And the person who gets that's going to get the grand prize. And that's going to be a really amazing gift. And you have to stay tuned for that.
Little teaser. Okay.
Yeah. I'm teasing it because I'm going big on that one. So,
okay. That's awesome. And just, the way that you're putting all this together, listen, I got, I was able to accomplish in 2012, my first slam with the bow. It was a single season slam, and I've had 3 slams since, but I'm going to tell you, it took every minute of the entire season to get it done, to the point where it was the last day in Nebraska and got my last bird on literally the last hour of the last day of the season. So I felt like that was a huge accomplishment. This is pretty amazing to be able to try to pull this off. And, you know, look, whether you accomplish it or not, the journey and what you're going through to raise money and to have the experience and bring people along, I think is just as, you know, amazing as, you know, trying to accomplish that feat itself.
That's right. And this is all in good fun, right?
Yeah.
This is not, honestly, you know, I'm not someone, I get really passionate about my bow hunting and when I'm killing big game and, you know, mule deer especially and elk and things. But, you know, turkey hunting is fun. It's about fellowship. There's always multiple people around the hunt typically. And again, this is just doing something that's trying to get people's attention,
yep,
to bring awareness for the NWTF. This is not an event that the NWTF is putting on. This is an event I am putting on,
sure,
in order to take the funds that we're going to raise, and 100% of every dollar that comes to us will be directed to the NWTF. 100%. Not one penny will pay for this trip any way, shape, form, or fashion. That's all being paid for by me. Everything's going to them. And then those guys are hopefully going to, they had a tough year with, you know, most charities during, sure, 2020 was really difficult. And so we're passionate about it. We want land to continue to be able to hunt and things like that. And so, again, it's all for fun. We're going to have a good time. We're going to do it legally. But you know, hey, if I got to ambush one, I'm going to ambush
one. You're dang right.
This isn't about, you know, trying to get footage of one crossing a field for 35 minutes, strutting for an hour. No, this is to get on them and get them as fast as we can get it done and move to the next spot and be able to document the trip. And we'll also be showing that entire, the entire put together show will be on my YouTube channel, along with a lot of other my hunts that I've got on that channel as well. And then, you know, we're going to be coming to everybody live the entire time,
okay,
through, all right, social media. We probably won't be filming a lot of the actual hunt, but we'll be doing walking to the stand, in the airplane, out of the airplane, traveling place to place, what we're doing to keep everybody in tune with what we're doing. We want people to feel like they're going to be on this trip with us. And so we're going to start promoting this. And I don't know if it went out today, but it'll be tomorrow, the next day.
Okay.
We'll promote, all right, for the first time. So this is going to be brand new around the 15th or 16th, and to create that momentum.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Listen, I wish you a ton of success. As a fellow turkey hunter, I want you to get every one of those birds that you can. But just, you know, what you're trying to do in the bigger picture of things through the NWTF, raise money. I've worked with that organization in the past, and they are truly the pinnacle and really what that gold standard of an organization is for wildlife. And so I think that's really impressive. And for that, I wish, you know, a ton of success, and everybody jumps in. So, you know, before we jump to the next topic, what I want to do is throw it out to the audience and say, listen, you know, this upcoming spring, you know, tell us about some of the places you're going to be hunting. If you're going to be, you know, on a quest for a slam, is it going to be with a bow, a shotgun, anything special that you guys might be doing? I want you to comment and let us know what you got going on this upcoming spring as well.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell you yeah, really quickly to end with that, because, you know, a lot of, I understand, and listen, I'm extremely fortunate. I've worked really hard for everything I've done in my life, and I am very fortunate to get to do the things that I do, and I have the resources to travel and do things to hunt and pay for hunts. I know a lot of you guys don't have a lot of money. You work really hard, and you really cherish those days hunting. And again, this is not an ad for my buddy, but this is truly, I see the stories of people trading hunts with people, and that's something that you can do. You do have a special place you hunt. And maybe you don't want to go kill your turkey this year. You'd rather give that turkey up in exchange for wanting to go to Colorado and kill a Merriam or go out west to do that. And this trading these hunts is a really great way for a normal guy, hardworking guy or girl who likes to hunt, who wants to get to go somewhere else and gets to go hunt. That's a great way to do it at Trips for Trade.
It really is. And, you know, and I encourage people that if they haven't had the opportunity to go hunt a Merriam or a Real, if you're a Southeastern, you know, hunter, do anything you can to go, whether it's South Dakota, it's Wyoming, Montana, you know, there are parts in Nebraska where you can hunt a Merriam. And to me, what a fun hunt. You know, they're very vocal and they just, you know, do a ton of fun stuff. Rio, very similar, you know, so if you do get a chance, you know, whether it's, you know, another avenue, or the avenue you're talking about, Trips and Trade, look into it, because hunting, you know, Rios and Merriams and even Osceolas are a fun turkey hunt.
That's right. Exactly.
So let's shift gears a little bit, John, and let's talk about some cooking. You are the host of Darn Hungry. I know this is something you're also very, very passionate about. Obviously, if you're the founder of Zoe's Kitchen, you know a little something about cooking and good food. So tell us a little bit about, you know, 2020, how all of this kicked off, and then, you know, what can people look forward to in 2021?
Well, yeah, so this is was a really, really great time putting this show together. It came out of nowhere. And okay, again, I'm somebody that truly believes that who you know, not what you know, is the most important thing in life. And my network has been my number one probably one of my number top three things that I attribute to my success in my life is my network. And I work really, really hard every day on that network, just like I would getting up going to work when I was working in the kitchens at the restaurant and building the restaurant business. And what I'm doing now, my network is everything. It's a highly, highly recommend that. And that can be as simple as you know you got a good network. If you're questioning, hey, I wonder if I have a good network. You know you got a good network that anything you need in your life on a day-to-day basis or anything you may have to make, it's a big purchase or you need to go somewhere or do anything. If you got somebody you can call to whether you need tires, so you have the guy that you know owns a tire shop, or you need to go, you know, you want to go over here and you want to get into a restaurant, can you call the person that owns the restaurant or, you know, the person who works the front door to get in? You know, that's the network thing. And so I was at the archery show at the ATA in Indy and ran into Dusty.
Okay.
At that point. Yep. And we just were chatting and I'm on the Hoyt Pro staff and some other in Badlands. And I was up there just to meet the people that support my hunting and meet people. I love it. And I love that industry. And so we met, we started sharing pictures of hunting. And
that's the show to do it at, for sure.
It is, because you can talk and it's great. Mm-hmm. And he was a killer and he liked some of the stuff that I killed. And I just wrote him a nice email at the end. Hey, it's nice to meet you. And I really never, you know, I didn't really press him. I didn't like, hey, I wasn't trying to get on this 5-point team or anything like that. And just, hey, nice to meet you. And then 7-8 months later, he called me out of the blue. It was like, hey, John, it's Dusty. I met you. And I, you know, I've been following you on social media and I just, you know, love all the stuff you're cooking and doing all that. And he said, this is going to sound really, really bizarre, but would you have an interest and filming a cooking series for 5-point cameras? And I'm like, okay, well, where, you know,
what's the tie-in
information, right? This is weird. And they said, no, but you know, we're really passionate about our content and we're really making an initiative to really create some good content. And we've got a nice budget to do this. And he said, would you be interested in doing it? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, I thought about it. And I said, absolutely. Because I've had some desires to do some stuff with some production and some other ideas that I've had. Cooking is one of them because I like to cook and I can do it very well. And so anyway, I said, sure. And they showed up at my farm and we filmed for 4 or 5 days.
Yep.
And let me tell you, doing that without a production team, meaning film production they had, but somebody producing me, and producing the show and the rest
of a lot of work,
all the work. Yeah. So I did that with basically one helper, Miss Dot, that works at my farm with some prep, and Miss Linda. And I just basically knew what I was going to cook. And I'm kind of one of the cooks that I just basically cook from scratch. And I really never use recipe.
Okay.
And so that was challenging because I never make it the same way twice, but in general, I know.
Sure.
And so I had to basically knew what I was going to cook. And when it came time to start filming, everything was just raw and off the cuff. And we were very fortunate that we did that, most of them in one take.
That's impressive.
And so that was, but it really took a toll on me about the third day. We did four episodes a day for 3 days. Was that my brain, what little I have left, was really, really tired. It was really taxing to really be that creative and thinking. You know, it's the process of trying to think like a computer thinks. It's thinking 20, 30 steps, and it does that in microseconds. Your brain works kind of like that. But I was having to speak and at the same time think about what I was going to continue to say, where it was going to go and what was going to happen, where the transitions were. And it just was all just done naturally. And so it was hard. I mean, I will tell you, you know, versus having somebody there that had already, you know, half the time we really needed to make, like, I baked a chicken. So I needed a chicken. I needed some people under me that would have already been making that chicken and have it ready. So the time when we started filming at a certain time, when I got done with the prep on the chicken, boom, we pulled the chicken right out instead of waiting an hour and then doing it and you have all that downtime. So anyway, it was super fun. And listen, the whole purpose of this show was in the goals for 5-point and doing this was in my goals personally, because the way that I cook, I can do some very technical things cooking, but you know what? Most of the time I cook very clean, protein rich foods with fresh vegetables and that's basically how I cook. And so I wanted to make recipes that anybody that watches could execute very simply without a lot of time. And you know, we talked about, you know, simple recipes that won't break the bank that taste great.
Well, and you know, look, that's people are wanting to learn how to cook more and more. And, you know, I'm a huge fitness guy. I cook all of my meals and like very similar to what you describe, high protein, you know, some good quality carbs, a lot of vegetables. And it takes time and it can get boring. So I'm excited to see some of these things from you, and because, you know, you can cook healthy and clean and still taste good. And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so you just have to be willing to explore a little bit, learn a little bit. And I'm an average cook, but I cook a lot, and you, over time, you force yourself to get creative. And if I find new ways and new, you know, ideas, I'm all about it. And so that's something I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing from you, as well as just, you know, good quality food, really making it taste good. And especially if you are into fitness and health and those things too, that's the other benefit for it.
That's right. And what you said, something that was so key is that, and it's really the whole message in these episodes, is that you have to just be willing to try.
Yep.
The worst thing you're going to do is mess up $15, $20 worth of ingredients, right? Yep. I mean, at the end of the day, and you just have to be willing to try. People are scared of cooking. They're scared of food. Americans are really, really scared of fish. I'd say 80% of all Americans don't like fish. I would say that most of them are very intimidated by cooking fish.
Really?
Because they don't know how to do it. They overcook it. Any fish that's overcooked is terrible.
Yep.
Especially unless it's fried, is always really, really bad. And so I understand it's intimidating, but just the willingness to try. And I think that, you know, the way we shot the videos, and they're not very long to watch and they're pretty simple to execute, I think people are going to have fun with it. I made corn dogs one day. I love corn dogs. And I made homemade corn dogs and showed them how we make these corn dogs.
Nice.
And the peanut oil. And oh my God, they were so, so good.
Love it. Love it. Listen, I can't wait. And, you know, so that's something that I think really adds to what you said Spy Point's trying to do. We're all passionate outdoors people, you know, whether you big game hunt, turkey hunt, we do a lot of bow fishing. We bow fish in Louisiana. We do. And we're also big, you know, ocean people. So my brother and I and Billy, you know, we spear fish and we bow fish down in the Keys and all that. And so, you know, but you're always got to eat. And, you know, if you're health conscious and, you know, and Spy Point's trying to just bring additional content and unique things that are real, organic, and just try to provide something beyond what just, you know, the traditional just about hunting. So there's the hunting, but I love this concept of cooking what you hunt and or just things in general to just, you know, be able to cook healthier.
Look, to me, hunting is three things. Okay. And this is serious to me. One is it takes 1 second to pull that trigger. Okay.
Yep.
Whether you're pulling the bow, pulling the trigger on the gun, setting the hook on the fish. That's a short period of time. Yeah. You're building up a lot of time, spend a lot of time hunting to get to that point to pull the trigger, but it really is pulling the trigger. The second thing is, what do you do the rest of the time you're on a hunt? It's about fellowship and friends and getting together in a meal. I mean, there's nothing more intimate than being out hunting with your buddies, being anywhere and sitting down together and having a great meal. And then thirdly, it's the places that it takes me hunting. I remember hunting at Bazar Ibex over in Turkey up in the mountains. And I was, you know, I'd climb down 2,000 feet into this gorge and was climbing back up another 2,000 going up after this goat. And I got down and this water was pouring, you know, just coming down this valley. And it was a narrow canyon, probably 20 yards wide. And the water literally looked like something like out of a movie. It was like so green that you couldn't even comprehend it. And everything was limestone. It looked like in France, looking at the side of a castle, but it's all these big rocks. And it's like, you know, why would I have ever been there unless I've been hunting? And so food, fellowship, where hunting takes you. And then, you know, hopefully having some success. And it's really what it's all about. And food is really, truly the greatest part.
No, listen, I couldn't agree with you more. And I've been blessed, you know, to travel some really neat places across North America the last 10 years and experience some of the things, you know, as well, that to me will always be in that memory bank that nobody can take away, you know. That's and right. we try to document and film it so you feel like you're in our back pocket, and maybe you don't get a chance to go there, but you can experience it through, you know, the things we try to do from a production standpoint. You know, listen, whether we're successful or not, which there's many times we're not successful, but we still show it, and it's the journey, and it's that experience that you'll have for the rest of your life. So I can completely appreciate that, that you're saying. On that note, do you have things that you're going to cook, you know, whether it's venison, whether it's wild turkey, elk, any of those things that you have any special, you know, approach to cooking the game that you're harvesting as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, just some really good pointers about cooking wild game is this is something that everybody can do. And the number one most important thing when you're dealing with wild game is it has to age. It has got to spend time with cold air around it and starting the decomposition process of breaking those enzymes down in the meat. That is the most critical thing when it comes to wild game, period. I mean, look, there are people that take ducks that don't pluck ducks, don't gut them, do anything, that leave them in a cooler for 3 weeks.
Wow.
Before okay. they clean them and cook them. And so look, just like when you dry age a steak, yep. it's just sitting there just decomposing. If you've ever eaten a dry aged steak, the smell is very pungent. It's almost like a cheese smell, right? And so, but there's a really beautiful thing about that process and the flavor of that meat that it gets once it's dry aged like that. So what I do with typically when I harvest an animal is I will hang it in a walk-in. If you don't have a walk-in, no problem. Take your meat and put it in your refrigerator. If you've got a refrigerator, if you've got a cooler, if you live somewhere up north, you just hang it out in the garage and have it where it can stay at least a week is great, but 2 weeks is really, really good. And if it sits there, the skin just gets purple, right?
Okay.
It just gets purple. Doesn't mean anything. It's nothing wrong. Even if a little mold grows on, if you've got a lot of humidity, you can just scrape that and cut that outer layer off. It doesn't do anything. Then when you cut that meat open, that redness of that meat is amazing. And then if you're going to make burger and you're going to cut your meat up to make burger, once you've aged it, and then you're going to cut the meat into cubes to put it through the grinder, it's really important to put that in a colander and let it sit with a pan underneath it to let that blood drain off of that.
Got it. Okay.
I'll usually do that for another 24 hours after I cut the meat up, and you'll be surprised how much blood's come out of that meat. And then I just find a good butcher where I can get some really good fat, because all these good butchers that are places that are cutting meat up, meat suppliers for high-end restaurants, things like that, they're cutting these, you know, prime beef and Wagyu and doing all this. They're trimming all these ribeyes up to cut steaks and to do certain things. And they have tons and tons of fat. It's better than just, you know, basic fat pellets that they give you. And so there's ways to get really good fat. And I typically use a 25% fat to 75% venison.
Especially
the
venison.
As far as ratio. Yep. And then, you know, when it comes to cooking the game, if you're going to cook it on a grill and you're going to eat it like a steak, it is super, super important to get that internal temperature right and that the meat has to rest. And all meat, when you know, typically for me, I never touch my elk, my mule deer, my whitetail. Nothing ever hits it except salt and pepper. That's it. And so I'll put salt and pepper on it. I bring it to room temperature before it ever gets cooked. So when it comes out, it'll come out of the refrigerator 2.5-3 hours before I cook it. I lay it on the counter, put a paper towel over it if there's flies or anything like that, put it on top of that, and then it goes onto the grill. And then there's multiple techniques on how you cook on the grill, but I hit it to about 128 internal temperature. I bring it off, and I let it sit there for 15 to 20 minutes just resting, and then I slice it. There's a misconception that things have to be eaten really hot. Totally not the case with meat. Meat needs to be consumed at a little bit lesser temperature because the meat has to rest to get it stop cooking and doing the things it needs to do. And so it's almost like a rite of passage. It's just when you're touching that meat and feeling it on the grill yep. to when you learn it. Listen, I'm in a liquidation business now. We ended up with all these temperature probes called meter, and it goes into it and Bluetooth to your phone, and it tells you exactly when it hits the right temperature.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And it tells you the internal temperature, the external temperature of the internal temperature of the grill, as well as what the meat is. And man, that changed my life.
Absolutely.
So I can execute that a lot better than being out there checking it and doing things like that. So that's a few tricks when it comes to the wild game and turkey, the wild turkey. Miss Dodd, who's a really famous Southern chef in our neck of the woods, and her fried chicken recipe is amazing. But when she fries turkey breasts and strips those down and cuts them and does them like chicken fingers, but turkey fingers, it's the number one most requested meal at Sawtooth Plantation. And if you get on my website and look at any of the food that we've ever prepared there, follow me.
That's right up there.
And I'm telling you, those turkey fingers for the wild turkey, and it's just marinate them in buttermilk and salt and pepper. It's a pretty simple recipe, cooked in peanut oil with only flour. And oh my God, they are to die for. And last year,
John? Was that an invite, my friend?
Yes, please. And my daughter and my girlfriend last year, we were quarantined together, and they screamed at us because we hunted every day. And I got all these great videos of turkeys, but we never shot a turkey. And because I couldn't get this one turkey that I wanted to kill, that I wanted to do, so I didn't shoot any. And so we're out of wild turkey meat at the farm. So this year we're gonna get where some birds are gonna hit the ground.
Nice, very, very cool. Listen, I mean, just a lot of great things going on in your world, and you know, excited for 2021 for you. Where else can people follow? You know, I know you hit it earlier, but what are some of the things that, you know, people can do to follow, you know, the work you're doing just in general, just to recap some of that?
Yeah. So just a little bit about me. Again, I grew up in Alabama, played football at the University of Alabama. And then, you know, I went into the world, the entrepreneurial world, and ended up starting this company that we ended up selling and taking public. And then I took about 8 years off and built my farm down in Alabama and put my hands in the dirt for a long time and kind of regrouped. And then I'm in the liquidation business now. So I've got a really fast growing company that we're basically the largest liquidator for Amazon. And we take all this product and resell it online. And then we also sell it in stores. And so that keeps me really busy. So my social media and my information is really right now, all my energy is being put in two directions. One is the hunting side of me, which is my most passionate side, along with my business. And so Crazy Cas Boys is, I'll give you guys all the links so we can get these posted up, but they can follow me there. We're doing some really fun stuff on TikTok and we do some really cool stuff with our business and how we're growing our business. And then also at John Casimus, my name is very unusual. So it was easy to get all my handles on social media, but I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and then YouTube at John Casimus. I'm really excited about my YouTube channel because I've got so many hunts over the years that we're editing right now. And I've got about 15 already done and they're ready to go. So when we launch this hunt,
you have a bunch of other content
edited. I'm going to also launch my other content. Yep. For example, guys and girls out there, I was fortunate enough. I killed a 235-inch mule deer archery spot and stalk. And it was truly one of the most epic times I've ever had in the outdoors. It was a long, very difficult day, 35-mile-an-hour wind sustained the entire day. Shot this buck at 63 or 5 yards. I can't remember. It was over 60 yards. And it had to aim about that far, 12 inches to the left of the animal to hit it. And it was just challenging. But that hunt's on there along with a lot of other ones. And so they're real short. They're not going to, you know, this is not, I don't get paid to do this. So this is just for fun and for people to have a good time. But I hope that, you know, some of the things that I do inspires people to want to work really hard. I fully believe as a human that you can't reach your full potential in life until you learn to suffer both physically and mentally so far beyond your imagination of what you thought you were capable of doing. I think then and only then can you grow as a human. And so I think that's kind of been my life. I keep the gas pedal, you know, to the floor every day when I wake up. I'm always challenging myself, whether it's business or hunting or anything in my life, sports. I'm going to do a 100-mile bike ride here with some guys here pretty soon that we're getting ready to go do. And listen, it's just a challenge every day. We're all given gifts from, you know, whatever you believe, whatever God you believe in, we're all given gifts. And And so I just fundamentally believe that my duty is to utilize those gifts to the maximum potential that I have and to continue to press until I either hit the ground and my time's over on earth or I don't, but I'm not going to stop. And so I think that, you know, a lot of the things that I've been able to do and accomplish have been strictly for just straight hard work. And listen, everybody's got to get lucky every now and then and be at the right place at the right time. But I fully believe that you put yourself in the right place at the right time by being prepared. And like Cam Haynes, who I love and know and is a good friend. And, you know, he's just like, hey, man, nobody cares. Work harder. And so for me, what drives me is that I know if my biggest thing that I ever done in my life is Zoe's Kitchen, which was a huge accomplishment. I mean, I started a company that ultimately after I left grew to, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 employees and 300 restaurants and went public. And, you know, and we, you know, we had a great run at that. But if the last thing I did in my life was kill a 235-inch mule deer, or the last thing I did was start Zoe's Kitchen, and I'm, you know, I feel like I'm still kind of young, even though I'm 54, you know, I would look at that as a complete failure for the rest of my life and be like giving up. Why am I stopping? Yeah,
you can't.
So I've got other things I want to do and I want to challenge myself. And I just, you know, fundamentally believe and know that anything out there is possible if you're willing to work hard for it. And I know that's a kind of a cliche, but I mean, listen, it's just a fact. It's a total fact.
It is a fact. And, you know, listen, we haven't had a chance to sit by the fire and share stories, but, you know, I have a very similar philosophy of some of the things I've gone through in my life and some of the hardships and tough times and things that, you know, led me to pathways that I wouldn't have experienced unless I had hardship or, you know, physical things that happened to me and, you know, injuries and things of that nature. And you just have to make the most of it and work harder than, you know, the person next to you and have a mindset that, listen, there's nothing you can't accomplish if you're willing to set a goal, work at it, and hold yourself accountable. And that to me is the way I live and my philosophy as well. So I respect everything you're saying.
Amen, Brian. Amen, brother. I mean, yeah.
Absolutely.
Four back operations later, last thing I can do now is ride a bike. I can't run, can't swim, can't do anything. And so here I am. I'm going to make do what I can do. When I can't do that anymore, I'll figure something else out.
You dang right, man. You dang right. So listen, I'm not going to waste people's time, but some very similar type of, you know, injuries and things and, you know, accidents. And so, you know, listen, I love your approach and I'm really excited, you know, about what you have, you know, coming up on the turkey side, the cooking side. And listen, you hit some really key things on, you know, the big game or game type of recipes. If people, you know, that are listening and watching, if you have some specific recipes that you guys can share that you use and are, you know, gold standards for yourself that we can all learn from, please post them and hit us up.
And then everybody can reach me. Yeah, you can email me as well through my website, johncastimus.com. And you can, if you send a email request in there, contact, it comes straight to me to my email address. If you have a question about anything, I'd be glad to try to get back to you. And again, we are super excited about this event, raising money at NWTF. Our goal is to raise over $100,000. My real goal would be over $200,000. And so we're going to need a lot of people really sharing this. And listen, it's $35 is the minimum donation, and that gets you a free membership. If you already got a membership, they'll add it on to your membership. They got a special for three memberships for $90 instead of $100. So you get a 10% discount. And it gives you a lot more benefit, ability to win more prizes with us. We've got some great stuff. You know what's really cool, Brian, and I'll leave you with this. The industry came together when we reached the people, and we reached out to all these sponsors. And we weren't asking them for money because, again, I said, I'm funding this.
Yep.
We need a product. And who else is doing this? I said, everybody's doing it. And because, you know what? Everybody needs the NWTF.
Yep.
Everybody has got to have that organization thrive and do well for all of these competing brands to do well. And so anyway, the beautiful thing is they all came together. Multiple companies that compete against each other were all given product to support this event. So it is going to be really fun. Please follow us, social media, everything. And I really appreciate you having me on today.
Listen, I'm again honored to be able to speak with you today. I love what you're doing, you know, on so many different levels. And I think we need more individuals like yourself that are passionate, but are willing to step out of the box, if you will, and to promote really for the bigger good for all of us to be able to experience the outdoors and turkey hunting and just in general what we love. So listen, You know, all right, everybody, you know, that's it for episode. It was really, you know, awesome talking with you today, John. And I want everybody to remember to rate, review, subscribe wherever, you know, you follow podcasts. And of course, you can find Spy Point on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and just search Spy Point. And so, you know, you can just hit, you know, that audience and, you know, find us on social media or the web. So thanks for joining us today, John. Thank you so very much. And until next time, we'll talk to you on our next Spy Point podcast. Be good, my friend.
Thank you.
Absolutely.